Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Hey, we're going to do a theater podcast this week, which I do from time to time. Just take a little break from politics. And our first interview is really cool. If you're a Broadway fan, you know who this woman is. But the best way to introduce you is to say, you know what? Sometimes he comes for conversation.
Sometimes comfort and consultation, he knows that's what he'll find. I bring him apples and cheeses, he brings me songs to play.
I love that voice. You love that voice.
Thank you.
Oh. And just in case anybody's not connecting it, although people who listen to this podcast know I'm all about theater, but that is the gorgeous voice of Laura Benanti. You may have seen her recently in Meteor Shower, Steve Martin's show on Broadway with Amy Schumer, Keegan Michael. I saw you in She Loves Me on Broadway, and also because I subscribe to Broadway HD, I watched you in my living room live one night as well.
Oh, great.
And, of course, CBS is The Good Wife and Nurse Jackie and The Detour on TBS, and I can go on forever, but if I do, we're not going to get to the reason that you and I are talking. And, of course, I know the performance you relate to more than anything else you do, and that's The Late Show's version of Melania Trump. You must love doing that.
Oh, gosh. I don't relate to it, but it's real fun.
I know. Joining me, Laura Benanti. Laura, can we just become best friends today?
Yes, let's do it.
I love it. Do you know, when I want to sound classy, I sometimes refer to you as Laura Benanti.
It's so funny because for the first probably 10 years of my career, I started when I was so young, I was 18. Everyone called me Laura Benanti, and I just never corrected anyone. I'm a young woman, and that's what I did back then. And only recently have I been like, it's actually Benanti, like banana.
Yeah, well, it's like Streisand, right? If you say Streisand, she's going to correct you.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, but I mean,
I'm not making that. Yeah, I know. Anyway, you are fabulous, and thank you for joining me. And we should talk about, other than my love for you, why we're talking, and that is because you are on your way to Chicago, and you are going to be headlining a benefit for the Chicago Theater Workshop that I want people to know about. They may not know a lot about it. On March 18th, not too far away, at the Victory Gardens Theater, where, by the way, if you sit in the front row, I've named some of the seats there. You can sit in seats that I've named. And you'll be
amazing.
Yeah, you'll be performing at 5 o'clock, at 8 o'clock at that theater. Can you tell folks a little bit about why you're choosing to help the Chicago Theater Workshop? You obviously love what they do, or you wouldn't do this. And let's talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the importance of live theater is now more than ever, as we live in this very digital age. So I really enjoy going to different parts of the country to help support organizations that promote live theater, and in particular, you know, new directors and writers. I love Chicago. I think it's
Yay.
An incredible town, and it's such an amazing theater town. I was there doing the Playboy Club, which lasted all of 3 episodes on ABC many years ago, and I just fell in love with it.
It's a great city.
And the actors there. You know, the thing about Chicago actors is they're just really about the work in a way that I find so refreshing and is similar to my mindset, and I really enjoy being around them. So for all those reasons and more, I'm really excited to be bringing my show to Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I do a television show here called Backstage, Broadway Backstage. And in fact, just tomorrow I'm sitting with the creators of Pretty Woman, which is coming up to Broadway.
Yes,
so Jerry Mitchell and Brian Adams, and they'll all be with me tomorrow. Samantha Barksdale, Steve Kidd, all everybody. But anyway, my point is that whenever I tape that show, which I do several times a year for big shows, Hamilton and whatever, the question is, why Chicago before you get to Broadway? And the answer is always because this town knows theater, and this town informs directors and playwrights exactly what shows need to be.
Yep, exactly, because you have an educated theater audience. You know, you have really sophisticated theater goers who, excuse me, who are, you know, of the same ilk as New York theatergoers. So I think it's probably the best place to go out of town because it's apples to apples.
What's really cool about
a lot of
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I say the Chicago Theater Workshop, one of the reasons they're very cool is because, as you know, that when they start working on a production, whatever, and they've got, by the way, Gods and Monsters coming up later on this season, and Seth Rudetsky is going to be here doing Disaster. So that's a couple of things on their agenda. But this my next comment may not be true about Disaster, but what they often do is they take a new work and it changes. So if you sort of go at the beginning of when they're doing something, it might be very different from when it's over. And what I love is the ability to go see these productions and see them change. Because that's the master of the artwork and watching things change.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because a lot of times television or film actors will ask me, like, don't you get bored doing theater? And I always say no, because it shifts and changes throughout the run. You know, I find some of... I have found some characters, like, in a way that's really meaningful to me towards the end of a run. And the audiences are what help shape that. You know, the audiences are that extra character.
You know, I did want to ask
you. We rely on them.
You do so much television, and I realize, you know, you're known for that, although if we toss The Late Show in there, at least that's in front of a live studio audience. But for me, and, you know, I haven't done that. I've been in little movies, whatever. I do live television here every night, but there's no studio audience. I'm just speaking out to the masses. The energy you have to get every night from a live theater audience on Broadway or wherever you are, and when you come to the Victory Gardens Theater, you just have to tell me that you enjoy live theater, maybe in a different way, but even more than you like doing the television thing for the connection.
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, if I could only do theater forever, I would. But I have a daughter, and we live in New York City, which is really expensive. And, you know, and I certainly do enjoy a lot of my television work. But, you know, for me, theater is where my heart is. It's my first love.
By the way, what is going to be coming up for you next? Are we lined up for the next Broadway show for you?
Not yet. No, I'm trying to figure out what's next. I'm not really sure yet. I'm doing some concerts, actually, with my mother. She and I have a cabaret show that we do together. We're actually doing it at the Kennedy Center this coming Friday.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, and then we're going to be in San Francisco at Feinstein's there over Mother's Day weekend. Other than that, I have a few things floating around, but they're not, you know, solidified enough to talk about them.
So I didn't hear you say that you were coming to Chicago with your mom to perform.
We would love to. I would love to do that.
Do you prefer, this is off time, I'm trying to book you now. Do you guys just like, because you said Kennedy Center, do you just like large venues or do you like intimate spaces?
No, I really prefer intimate venues. We're actually going to be... at the smaller space at the Kennedy Center.
Oh, okay.
I think for cabaret, that can be really important. Can I tell you
Can I tell you where to check out in Chicago? I'm not tied to them at all. I'm just being Davenport's. Have you heard of Davenport's?
No.
So when Levi Kreis is here from Million Dollar Quartet, he's a good friend. He's always at Davenport's. Okay. The cast of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Love Never Dies just did a night at Davenport's. It's a fabulous little intimate room, like the old days of playing the old clubs. You would love it.
Ooh, I love it. I love that idea. I played the smaller in room at Ravinia.
The hall, really,
and I did that.
Absolutely.
Pardon?
No, I know the hall. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great, and I loved it there. So actually, that size would be perfect for me and my mom.
Oh, well, Ravinia, it
so
is.
I'm putting that out there. I'm putting that into the universe.
Well, I want you to come back. But I want people to know they can see you on March 18th, 5 p.m., 8 p.m. Are they the same show, by the way, or can we stay twice?
You can stay twice if you want, but you're going to know all jokes.
Okay. I love it. And because you're actually pretty funny. I mean, I hear a lot of that. You do a lot of good stuff. People can get tickets. And remember, this isn't just, I mean, it is about coming to see Laura, but you are benefiting the Chicago Theater Workshop. So I should give the website for that. It's Chicago Theater Workshop. And you know what? They spell theater right. They end it with the R-E, which I think is really classy. This E-R thing is like too American for me. It's Chicago Theater Workshop, TRE.org, and March 8th. Now, is this part of the show that you are traveling with, either alone or with your mom, or is this a special show at Victory Gardens Theater just for Chicago Theater Workshop?
No, it's a show that I actually debuted at the Carlisle when I was pregnant with my daughter.
Oh, fabulous club. Yes.
It's my favorite show that I've done, and at this point we've done three or four cabaret shows, I can't remember. And to me, this is my favorite. It's the most eclectic mix. Todd Almond, my music director, who's also an amazing composer, and my friend, is just so incredibly talented, and we get to sing together, and I sing one of his songs that he wrote, and it's all very, it feels really relaxed. I want it to feel like you're coming into my house, and I'm telling you stories and singing songs.
So what you're saying is if I come up on stage and just start doing something from Fiddler, you'll join me?
I mean, sure, that's what I do in my house.
I love it. You're so wonderful, and I so appreciate you're spending a little time with me. I'm going to say it again. It's March 18th, 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock. That means two performances. They're at the Victory Gardens Theater, so I don't want people to get confused because Chicago Theater Workshop actually is at a couple of different venues, so I won't even go there. But it's at Victory Gardens, which is on Lincoln. But by the way, have you ever been to the Victory Gardens? Do you know the history of that building?
I don't. I'd love to know.
So have you heard of John Dillinger?
Yes, I have.
He was killed there.
Oh, okay. Wow.
The Biograph Theater was the famous Biograph Theater back in the 30s. Dillinger was there. Then the FBI came to get him when he came out, and they shot him dead right in front of that theater. And so that's where you're going.
God. That's a fun fact I'm probably going to just start the show with, everybody in a terrible, terrible mood.
Now, we're okay with it.
Guess who's murdered here, you guys. That's why I start all my shows now. Guess who's murdered here?
Well, they have changed the carpet since that happened. I think you're okay on that.
I do appreciate that.
But the original box office
is
there.
I'm glad to hear about that.
You will see the box office.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. Well, and I hope to see you when you're there because I plan to be there. ChicagoTheaterWorkshop.org is where you get tickets. So I came in talking to you playing He Comes for Conversation. I don't know if you can guess what I want to go out playing with, but you might be able to guess if I ask you what you think my favorite food is and what flavor of favorite food do you think it is.
Vanilla ice cream.
You are so right. Laura Benanti, you're fabulous. I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
See you in Chicago on March 18th, Victory Gardens Theater, ChicagoTheaterWorkshop.org. Here is Laura giving you an incredible treat, singing from She Loves Me, Vanilla Ice Cream.
He brought me ice cream, vanilla ice cream. Imagine that ice cream. And for the first time, we were together without a spell. Never cease. It's been the most peculiar day.
Colonel Barry Hill has the best mechanics and cleanest restrooms on the road in this part of the country. And now, Negroes are welcome there.
Why is he doing this grand gesture?
Negroes are paid more.
That's the catch.
That's what always happens to us.
You're dragging your wife all over this country. You are now able to stop at Berry Hills if you need.
Are you sure my wife and I will be treated with dignity and respect?
The Colonel has signed on the dotted line promising that we will all receive quality service at any of his stations.
Promises are just words, and words are nothing more than wind.
Berry Hills no fool. Trust me. He knows that businesses like his must change in order to make money.
Well, lots of dynamics going on as you listen to that clip. What's it all about? It is a moment in history that, I'll be honest, I've studied history and I didn't know about this, and you might not either, but you will if you check out a show called The Green Book, which is playing at Pegasus Theater in Chicago. Really fascinating play and tackling a topic and subject. As I said, it was new to me, and I'm embarrassed to say that, but let's all get on board. Joining me now is the playwright for The Green Book, Calvin Ramsey. Calvin, welcome. Boy, what a great job you did with this show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Also joining us, the director of the show, Alaysha Duncan. She's also the artistic director at Pegasus Theater in Chicago. Alaysha, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And David Chack is the artistic director of Spiel Performing Identity. I grew up with that word. So he joins us because there's actually a couple of different dynamics that go on here. There's a base to the story, but it extends over into other cultures as well, as you'll see. Calvin, I'm going to start with you. You're responsible for creating this. You actually wrote, I think there's a version of a children's book that you wrote prior to this play, correct?
Well, the play came first. You know, I wrote the play first. And the children's book is rooted in The Green Book, but it's a totally different story. You know, it's totally different. It's a little girl traveling from Chicago to Selma, 1953, and this play takes place 1956, and it's not a children's play at all.
All right. No, it's not. I just wanted to make that reference that we see it in other places. The theme is a bit there. So this this book, this play, the Green Book, refers to, the Green was a guy, Victor Green. And this was a period in time that I didn't know about. I've said that three times. So, Calvin, let me turn to you and tell us what the story of this play is about and what it is that people are going to be learning when they see this show.
Well, Victor Hugo Green was a letter carrier in Harlem, and he started the Green Book in 1936 along with his wife, Alma Green, and they lived in Sugar Hill, Harlem, right across from Duke Ellington, and a lot of people, and a lot of other people in that area of music and history fame were all in Harlem during this period, during the Harlem Renaissance. But African Americans had a real, real dreadful time of traveling during this period because of Jim Crow and not having access to public accommodations on the open road. And this is, you know, way before a passage of the Civil Rights Act, just like 30 years before that. And so the Green Book was really needed, and blacks could not belong to AAA. So we did not have a car service or a guide, and Victor Green, along with his wife, decided to do something about that. And they got the idea from a Jewish friend of Victor's, who the Jewish community also had issues of traveling with signs saying restricted and Jews not wanted. So they had a book of themselves, and this gentleman mentioned it to Victor, and from there it just started. Victor got other mail carriers around the United States, and they were all mostly men then. Yeah. In the 30s, African-American men, and they would collect addresses and business services that could provide services for the Negro traveler at the time.
And, Alaysia, so this comes to Pegasus Theater Company. I know you're working with Spiel. We're going to talk to both of you. But with regard to Pegasus, and I know you guys are, you know, so much of your work, I've seen so much of it over the years, it's about community engagement, social issues. I mean, that is so. It makes sense that you guys would put this on, but I'm sort of curious on the what struck you about this play and why you thought this is a message that has to go out. And then I don't know who went to who, but I'll get your answer first, and then find out from David. Something must have spoken to you to say I need to work with Alaysia and make this happen. But Alaysia, let me start with you.
I believe that the main thing that grabbed me was that I know there were people who don't know about this history. And that,
so I'm not alone in that.
No, you're not alone. And that we are living in times right now where it is unsafe in certain parts of the country for African Americans to travel. And there has been a resurgence in the interest of that Green Book amongst people who do know about it. So there are new versions of it that ensure that we can travel safely. And Missouri has been listed as a place that is currently unsafe to travel.
Wow, that's interesting.
Set in Missouri, yeah.
So, and I do know. I think the Smithsonian, the African American History Museum, those are places you can actually get a copy of this book, right? The actual Green Book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense. I get the story being told certainly on behalf of the African American community, David. Although Calvin, you know, made the reference to you know, Jewish folks' involvement in this, but what spoke to you on behalf of Spiel to say, yeah, this is a story that needs to have both perspectives here, and that we need to be part of producing this?
Right. No, that's an excellent question, and one of the things that drew actually Calvin came to me first, not to Alaysia first. And a friend of ours, a mutual friend playwright, got us together because they knew that I'm not only interested in Jewish cultural theater and performance, I'm also interested in intercultural theater and performance. And the works that Spiel has done has also been involved in social action and social justice, but also how it spans cultures, how it spans identities, how it spans ethnicities and religions. So the connection that Calvin mentions between the publisher who was Jewish, who helped to publish the Green Book initially, but also about the Jewish community and Jews that were very involved in the civil rights movement, Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney. Goodman and Schwerner were Jewish. They went and were murdered by Ku Klux Klan people in the 60s, trying to register people to vote. There were Jews that were very involved in the NAACP. And this is a history, not only is the Green Book not known, these days, but the history and relationship between African Americans and Jews has been strong, and now there are ways that people in politics are trying to drive us apart, and that's really what drew me to this play. We need to realize that we're all in this together, and that's what this play is about.
And you said something I didn't know. You said Calvin came to you first, and so Calvin, I have to ask you, because I would have guessed maybe Pegasus first or something like that. So obviously something spoke to you. Talk to me about how you decided that the theaters that you wanted to approach with this. And by the way, I'm curious because the show has opened. It's going to play till April 1st, by the way. But how did you feel as you watched your work unfold on the stage?
Well, I was very pleased with it. You know, this really is a great production. I live in New York City, so I don't know a lot about Chicago and the Chicago theater community. But I hope you do now.
I
have a mutual friend in Atlanta. You know, I spent a lot of years in Atlanta, and we have a mutual friend named Hank Kimmel, who's a playwright down there. And so Hank is the one that introduced me to David. And David was in Philadelphia doing something, and I went down to meet him, and we talked, and it kind of started from there. But I just didn't know a lot about Chicago. And then I met Alicia a few months ago. I came to town, and, you know, I liked her, and I Googled her and saw some other things she had been doing. And so it started from there. And then we have another friend, Joan Mazzanelli. So us as a team kind of got together to make all this happen. But that's what, you know, got me to Chicago. Like I said, I live in New York, so yeah. I didn't know a lot about the theater scene, but I'm very impressed with what I've seen so far.
And I was going to really say, because you know most Broadway musicals start here, too, so this is certainly
I know you got to touch Chicago. You have to come to Chicago, so I'm very honored to, you know, it's like almost like, you know, when you're hitting a home run, you got to touch first base, second base, third base, fourth base. I mean, home plate, so... So you have to, I think, come to Chicago to get some work done and to get some to get the kinks worked out. So I'm glad to be here.
Totally. Alicia, so you're the director of this, not only artistic director of Pegasus, but you chose to direct this show. What kind of discussions did you have with the cast ahead of time? Because I'm guessing maybe the cast wasn't familiar with this history either.
Most weren't. And I think, and just to clarify, I was actually chosen as they approached me, David and Joan approached me to direct the play.
Independently.
And once I read it, I thought, you know, would you be open to a co-production with Pegasus? Because that's also Pegasus' history of doing these social justice plays and telling hard-to-tell stories. And so that was how that relationship worked. But the initial discussion with the cast was the importance of, because of where we are now, that we must look back at history and look at the connections and the types of relationships that did exist between African Americans and Jewish community, and how this particular story is a seed of that, is a seed of what would come later, and that it is important to see where this story originates. That it originates with the Green Book, but that it is at the crux not only of Jim Crow, but of what would happen in terms of civil rights activism. At the time of the setting of this play, Emmett Till has already been murdered. The bus boycott is Montgomery is going on, and it is affecting, that word is spreading amongst the community throughout the country, and would influence what happens later. So the whole idea of, I think, the work that went into it was our talking about those different relationships and the difficulty and complexity of stories that were happening amongst African Americans in this time frame.
Yeah, and David, the story itself has been nicely laid out by Calvin and Alicia, but the truth is, it's one thing to see this moment of history, but if you don't walk out talking about it and you don't walk out wondering about the implications, as Alicia said, you know, Missouri, not a safe place for travel even today, and it almost self-answers the question. But talk to me from your perspective about when people walk out and they're discussing it, what's the relationship you think they ought to be thinking about to today's world and this country?
Yeah, I think they need to realize that the history of racism and of African Americans in this country is our history. This cannot just be seen as African American history. The history of ways that Black people had to travel, how the stories I've heard in producing this play and in gathering the information to help with the rewrite have just been amazing. The ways that the African-American community relied on the Green Book and sometimes were in areas of the country where there was no place to go. So they had to sleep in their cars, or they had to, you know, little children would say, "Oh, Daddy, why are we waiting here in the parking lot overnight? Why don't we go to some place where we can get a nice bed, or where I can go to the bathroom?" And their parents would have to quiet the kids down and say, "Everything's going to be all right. Don't worry. We'll get to a place soon." And this was the life that African Americans led, not only then, but actually even to this day. There are times when Black people get pulled over and they don't know what's going to happen. And this is not just African American history. This is our history. This is white people's history, Jewish history, Latinx history, and we need to own this and realize that all of us are being affected by this, and we have to change this. And that's one reason why I really liked what Calvin did by including this Holocaust Jewish survivor who had gone through the horrors of the Holocaust in the most brutal ways you can imagine, through Auschwitz and then Buchenwald, in a sense mirroring the journey of Elie Wiesel, who went into the worst of the worst. And that's the fellow we have on stage. And a lot of people also don't realize African-American soldiers helped to liberate Buchenwald. They were the ones that were sent in first. And that's also part of the play, to realize that we owe a debt of gratitude to these African-Americans who were so brave and in the face of racism said, "We're American. And we're going to fight for our country."
Calvin, it sounds like that's exactly the kind of thinking and thought process you want when people see your play and walk out and think about it, what David's putting out.
Yes, and also wanted to show people the beauty of African-American people helping each other. You know, all the stories weren't, you know, gloom and doom. I mean, the beauty of people, and I want to show the young people that there was a time, today you see so many cities around the country where there's black-on-black crime and the murder rates are high in a lot of the communities. But I wanted young folks to see, and older folks too, to see there was a time not too long ago that the beauty of black people helping each other, helping strangers. You know, your house is listed, there's no phone number in the book, and you just show up, you know, knocking on the door and say, "You know, I see you listed in the Green Book, we need a place to stay." And the doors were open. So I think young folks need to hear that, they need to see that, need to feel that, because it wasn't that long ago how we took care of one another, and we still do. Those stories aren't being told. So I think more good things need to be talked about instead of just the bad things that are happening.
Well, this play is playing through April 1st at Pegasus's resident home, Chicago Dramatists. Alicia, correct me if I'm wrong. It is 765 North Aberdeen. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And you can get tickets at Pegasus Theater Chicago. By the way, you spell theater the correct way, Ari. I love when that happens. PegasusTheaterChicago.org through April 1st. The Green Book. Again, you learn something, you think, you talk, and how great that this was a collaboration between folks representing others who have gone through parts of history that I think a lot of us wish had just never happened, but sadly come to realize it's still going on. Calvin Ramsey, the playwright of The Green Book, Alicia Duncan, the director of The Green Book and the artistic director over at Pegasus, and David Chack, artistic director for Spiel Performing Identity. Hope everybody will check out all those theater companies and your work, because you've done so much. You've done some really cool things, Calvin, as I was doing some homework on you, some work on Johnny Mercer and whatever, really cool stuff. Thank you guys for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. See The Green Book by April 1st. Don't miss it.